that had been further deepened. Once again, Roile's frugality had been behind the choice. With little ceremony, Roile ordered the coffin lowered into the hole. A large group of workers began to build the mound over it. Serene was surprised how many nobles stayed to watch. The weather had turned cold lately, bringing a chill wind from the mountains. A drizzle hung in the air, clouds obscuring the sun. She had expected most of the nobility to trickle away after the first few shovels of dirt were thrown. But they stayed, watching the work with silent eyes. Serene, dressed for once in black, pulled her shawl close to ward off the cold. There was something in the eyes of those nobles. Aedin had been the first king of Aerilon. His rule, short though it had been, the beginning of a tradition. People would recall Aedin's name for centuries, and children would be taught how he had risen to power in a land whose gods were dead. Was it any wonder he had turned to the mysteries? With all he had seen, the glory of pre-Riod Elantris, then the death of an era thought eternal, was it any wonder he sought to control the chaos that seemed to reign in the land of the gods? Serene thought she understood Aedin a little bit better, standing in the chill dampness, watching the dirt slowly envelop his coffin. Only when the last shovel of dirt was thrown, the last part of the mound patted down, did the Aerilish nobility finally turn to leave. Their going was a quiet procession, and Serene barely noticed. She stood for a while longer, looking at the king's barrow in the rare afternoon fog. Aedin was gone. It was time for new leadership in Aerilon. A hand fell lightly on her shoulder, and she turned to look into Roile's comforting eyes. "We should get ready, Serene." Serene nodded and allowed herself to be led away. Serene knelt before the altar in the familiar, low-ceilinged Carathi chapel. She was alone. It was customary for a bride to have one last private communion with Domai before taking her marriage vows. She was draped head to foot in white. She wore the dress that she had brought for her first wedding, a chaste, high-necked gown that her father had chosen. She wore white silken gloves that reached all the way to her shoulders, and her face was swathed in a thick veil, which, by tradition, wouldn't be lifted until she entered the hallway where her fiancé waited. She wasn't certain what to pray about. Serene considered herself religious, though she was nowhere near as devout as Eondel. Still, her fight for Teod was really a fight for the Carathi religion. She believed in Domai and regarded him with reverence. She was faithful to the tenets the priests taught her, even if she was, perhaps, a little too headstrong. Now it appeared that Domai had finally answered her prayers. He had delivered her a husband, though he was not at all what she had expected. "Perhaps," she thought to herself, "I should have been a little more specific." There was no bitterness in the thought, however. She had known most of her life that she was meant for a marriage of policy, not of love. Roile really was one of the most decent men she had ever met. Even if he was old enough to be her father, or even her grandfather. Still, she had heard of state marriages far more unbalanced. Several Jinduiz kings were known to have taken brides as young as 12 years old. So her prayer was one of thanks. She recognized a blessing when she saw one. With Roile as her husband, she would be queen of Aerilon. And if Domai did decide to take Roile from her in a few years, She knew the Duke's promise was true. She would have another opportunity. "Please," she added as it closed to her simple prayer, "just let us be happy." Her lady attendants waited outside, most of them daughters of nobility. Kaice was there, looking very solemn in her little white dress, as was Torina. They held Serene's long, cloak-like train as she walked the short distance to her carriage. Then again, as she alighted and entered the palace. The throne room doors were open, and Roael stood in a white suit near the front of the room. It was his intention to sit on the throne as soon as the ceremony was finished. If the Duke did not make his claim in a forceful, unquestionable manner, then Telrai might still try to seize control. The diminutive Father Omine stood beside the throne, clutching the large tome of the Dokorath. There was a dreamy look on his face. The little priest obviously enjoyed weddings. Cynalyn stood beside him, petulant that Serene hadn't asked him to officiate. She didn't really care. Living in Teode, she had always assumed that the patriarch would wed her. Now that she had an opportunity to use a priest she actually liked, she wasn't going to give in. She stepped into the room, and all eyes turned toward her. There were as many people at the wedding as there had been at the funeral, if not more. Aiden's funeral had been an important political event, but Roael's marriage was even more vital. The nobility would see it as paramount that they begin Roael's reign with the proper level of sycophantic flattery. Even the Yorn Wraithen was there. It was odd, Serene thought, that his face appeared so calm. Her wedding to Roael was going to be a major obstacle to his conversion plans. For the moment, however, Serene put the Fjordel priest out of her mind. She had been waiting for this day for a long time, and even if it wasn't what she had once hoped for, she would make the best of it. It was finally happening. After all the waiting, after two near misses, she was actually going to get married. With that thought, both terrifying and vindicating, she raised her veil. The screaming started immediately. Confused, mortified, and shocked, Serene reached to pull off her veil, thinking perhaps that there was something wrong with it. When it came off, her hair went with it. Serene stared down at the long tresses with stupefaction. Her hands began to shake. She looked up. Roael was stunned. Cynalyn outraged, and even Omine clutched his Karathi pendant with shock. Serene turned frantically, her eyes finding one of the broad mirrors on either side of the throne room. The face that stared back was not her own. It was a repulsive thing, covered with black spots. Defects that stood out even more markedly against her white dress. Only a few fugitive strands of hair still clung to her diseased scalp. Inexplicable and mysterious, the Sheod had come upon her. Chapter 39. Wraithen watched several Karathi priests lead the stunned princess from the quiet room. "Such are the judgments of Holy Yadith," he announced. The Duke, Roael, sat on the edge of the throne dais, head held between his hands. The young Jindo Baron looked as if he wanted to follow the priests and demand Serene's release. And the Marshal Count Eondel was weeping openly. Wraithen was surprised to realize that he took no joy from their sorrow. Princess Serene's fall was necessary, but her friends were of no concern. Or at least they shouldn't be. Why was he bothered that no one had shed tears at his own fall before the Shaod? Raythan had begun to think that the poison would take effect too late, that the surprise marriage between Serene and Roael would go forward unchallenged. Of course, Serene's fall would probably have been just as disastrous after the marriage, unless Roael had intended to take the throne this very evening. It was an uncomfortable possibility. One, fortunately, Raythan would never have the opportunity to see fulfilled. Roael wouldn't crown himself now. Not only did he lack the legal right, but his fortune was still less than that of Telrai. Raythan had checked the wedding contract. This time, a death was not the same as a marriage. Raythan pushed his way through the stunned crowd toward the exit. He had to work quickly. Serene's potion would wear off in 5 days. Duke Telrai met Raythan's eyes as he passed, nodding with a respectful smile. The man had received Raythan's message and had not acted against the wedding. Now his faith would be rewarded. The conquest of Aerilon was almost complete. Chapter 40. There should be a way to get up there, Raoden said, shading his eyes as he looked at the Elantra city wall. During the last few hours, the sun had emerged, burning away the morning mists. It hadn't, however, brought much warmth with it. Galadin frowned. I don't see how, Sule. Those walls are rather high. You forget, my friend, Raoden said. The walls weren't made to keep people in, or even really to keep enemies out. The old Elantrians built stairs and viewing platforms on the outside of the wall. There should be others in here. Galadin grunted. Ever since the guards had mysteriously disappeared from the walls, Raoden had wanted to find a way up. The walls belonged to Elantris, not the outside world. From them, perhaps they could find out what was happening in Kaye. The guards' inattentiveness bothered him. The disappearance was fortunate in a way. It lessened the possibility that someone would notice new Elantris. However, Raoden could only think of a couple of reasons why the soldiers would leave their post on the walls, and the most likely one was also the most worrisome. Could the East finally have invaded? Raoden knew that an invasion was all too possible. Wyrn was too opportunistic to let a gem like post-Riod Aerilon go unmolested forever. Fjordan would attack eventually. And if Aerilon fell before Wyrn's holy war, then Elantris would be destroyed. The Dorethi priests would see to that. Raoden didn't voice his fears to the other Elantrians, but he did act on them. If he could place men on the walls, then he would have prior warning of an army's approach. Perhaps with advance notice, Raoden would have time to hide his people. One of the three empty ruined towns outside of Elantris was probably their best hope. He would lead them there, if he had the chance. Assuming he was in any condition to help, the door had come against him twice in the last 4 days. Fortunately, while the pain was growing stronger, so was his resolve. Now, at least, he understood. There, Galadin said, pointing to an outcropping. Raoden nodded. There was a chance the stone column held a stairwell. Let's go. They were far from New Elantris, which was positioned in the center of the city, to hide it from prying wall-top eyes. Here in Old Elantris, the slime still covered all. Raoden smiled. The dirt and grime was becoming repulsive to him again. For a while he had almost forgotten how disgusting it was. They didn't get very far. Soon after, Galadin pointed out the stairwell. A messenger from New Elantris appeared from a side street behind them. The man approached on quick feet, waving toward Raoden.
"My Lord Spirit," the man said.
"Yes, Tenryo," Raoden asked, turning.
"A newcomer has been thrown into the city, my lord?"
Raoden nodded. He preferred to greet each newcomer personally.
"Shall we go?"
he asked Galadin.
"The walls will wait," the doula agreed.
The newcomer turned out to be a she. The woman sat with her back to the gate, her knees pulled up against her chest, her head buried in her sacrificial robes.
"She's a feisty one, my lord," said Daishi,
who had been serving as watcher when the newcomer arrived.
"She screamed at the gate for a full 10 minutes after they tossed her in. Then she threw her offering basket against the wall and sank down like she is now."
Raoden nodded. Most newcomers were too stunned to do much besides wander. This one had strength. Raoden gestured for the others to remain behind. He didn't want to make her nervous by bringing a crowd. He strolled forward until he was directly in front of her, then squatted down to regard her at eye level.
"Hello there," he said affably. "I'm willing to guess you've had an awful day."
The woman looked up. When he saw her face, Raoden nearly lost his balance in surprise. Her skin was splotched, and her hair was missing. But she had the same thin face and round, mischievous eyes. Princess Serene. His wife.
"You don't know the half of it, Spirit," she said,
a small, ironic smile coming to her lips.
"I'll bet I understand more than you think I do," Raoden said. "I'm here to make things a little less dreary."
"What?" Serene asked, her voice suddenly turning bitter. "Are you going to steal the offering the priest gave me?"
"Well, I will if you really want me to," Raoden said. "Though I don't think we need it. Someone was kind enough to deliver us several large batches of food a few weeks back."
Serene regarded him with hostile eyes. She hadn't forgotten his betrayal. "Come with me," he urged, holding out his hand.
"I don't trust you anymore, Spirit."
"Did you ever?" Serene paused, then shook her head. "I wanted to, but I knew that I shouldn't."
"Then you never really gave me a chance, did you?"
He stretched his hand out a little closer.
"Come with me."
She regarded him for a moment, studying his eyes. Eventually, she reached out her fine, thin-fingered hand and placed it in his own for the first time, allowing him to pull her to her feet. Chapter 41. The sudden change was nothing less than stupefying. It was as if Serene had stepped from darkness into sunlight, burst from brackish water into warm air. The dirt and grime of Elantris stopped in a crisp line, beyond which the cobblestones were pure and white. Anywhere else, the street's simple cleanliness would have been noticeable, but not remarkable. Here, with the rot of Elantris behind her, it seemed as if Serene had stumbled into Domai's paradise. She stopped before the stone gate, staring at the city within a city, her eyes wide and disbelieving. People talked and worked within, each bearing the cursed skin of an Elantrian, but each wearing a pleasant smile as well. None wore the rags she had assumed were the only available clothing in Elantris. Their outfits were simple skirts, or trousers and a shirt. The cloth was strikingly colorful. With amazement,
Serene realized that these were the colors she had chosen. What she had seen as offensive, however, the people wore with joy. The bright yellows, greens, and reds highlighting their cheerfulness. These were not the people she had seen just a few weeks before, pathetic and begging for food. They looked as if they belonged to some pastoral village of lore. People who expressed a good-natured joviality Serene had thought unrealistic in the real world. Yet they lived in the one place everyone knew was even more horrible than the real world. What? Spirit smiled broadly, still holding her hand as he pulled her through the gateway into the village. Welcome to New Elantra, Serene. Everything you assumed is no longer valid. I can see that. A squat Elantrian woman approached, her dress a mixture of vibrant greens and yellows. She eyed Serene critically. I doubt we've got anything in her size, Lord Spirit. Spirit laughed, taking in Serene's height. Do your best, Mayor, he said, walking toward a low-ceilinged building at the side of the gate. The door was open, and Serene could see rows of clothing hanging on pegs inside. Embarrassed, she was suddenly aware of her own clothing. She had already stained the white garment with slime and muck. Come, dearie, Mayer said, leading her to a second building. Let's see what we can do. The motherly woman eventually found a dress that fit Serene reasonably well, or at least a blue skirt that showed her legs only up to mid-calf, along with a bright red blouse. There were even undergarments, though they too were constructed of bright materials. Serene didn't complain. Anything was better than her filth-soiled robe. After pulling on the clothing, Serene regarded herself in the room's full-length mirror. Half of her skin was still flesh-toned, but that only made the dark splotches more striking. She assumed that her flesh tones would dim with time, becoming gray like those of the other Elantrians. Wait, she asked hesitantly. Where did the mirror come from? It isn't a mirror, dearie, Mayer informed as she sifted through socks and shoes. It's a flat piece of stone, part of a table, I think, with thin sheets of steel wrapped around it. Looking closely, Serene could see the folds where sheets of steel overlapped one another. All things considered, it made a remarkable mirror. The stone must have been extremely smooth. But where? Serene stopped. She knew exactly where they had gotten sheets of steel that thin. Serene herself had sent them, again thinking to get the better of Spirit, who had demanded several sheets of metal as part of his bribe. Mayer disappeared for a moment, then returned with socks and shoes for Serene. Both were different colors from either her shirt or her skirt. Here we are, the woman said. I had to go over and pilfer these from the men. Serene felt herself blush as she accepted the items. Don't mind, dearie, Mayer said with a laugh. It makes sense you'd have big feet. Domai knows you need more on the bottom to support all that height. Oh, and here's the last thing. The woman held up a long, scarf-like piece of orange cloth. For your head, Mayer said, pointing at the similar cloth wrapped around her own head. It helps us forget about the hair. Serene nodded thankfully, accepting the scarf and tying it around her scalp. Spirit waited for her outside, wearing a pair of red trousers and a yellow shirt. He smiled as she approached. I feel like an insane rainbow, Serene confessed, looking down at the menagerie of colors. Spirit laughed, holding out his hand and leading her deeper into the city. unconsciously. She found herself judging his height. "He's tall enough for me," she thought almost offhandedly, if only barely. Then, realizing what she was doing, she rolled her eyes. The entire world was toppling around her, and all she could do was size up the man walking next to her. "Get used to the idea that we all look like seeker birds in the spring," he was saying. "The colors don't bother you all that much once you wear them for a while. Actually, after the dull monotones of old Elantris, I find them quite refreshing." As they walked, Spirit explained New Elantris to her. It wasn't very large, perhaps 50 buildings in all, but its compact nature made it feel more unified. Though there couldn't have been many people in the town, 500 or 600 at most, there always seemed to be motion around her. Men worked on walls or roofs, women sewed or cleaned, even children ran in the streets. It had never occurred to her that the Sheod would take children as well as adults. Everyone greeted Spirit as he passed, calling out with welcoming smiles. There was true acceptance in their voices, displaying a level of loving respect Serene had rarely seen given to a leader. Even her father, who was generally well-liked, had his dissenters. Of course, it was easier with such a small population, but she was still impressed. At one point they walked by a man of indecipherable age. It was hard to put years with faces in Elantris, sitting on a stone block. He was short, with a large belly, and he didn't greet them. His inattention, however, was not a sign of incivility. He was just focused on the small object in his hand. Several children stood around the man, watching his bent-over work with eager eyes. As Serene and Spirit passed, the man held the object out to one of the children. It was a beautifully carved stone horse. The girl clapped ecstatically, accepting the piece with exuberant fingers. The children ran off as the sculptor reached down to select another rock from the ground. He began to scrape at the stone with a short tool. As Serene peered closely at his fingers, she realized what it was. "One of my nails," she said. "He's using one of the bent nails I sent you." "Hmm?" Spirit asked. "Oh, yes. I have to tell you, Serene, we had quite a time figuring out what to do with that particular box. It would have taken far too much fuel to melt them all down, even assuming we had the tools for smelting. Those nails were one of your more clever adaptations." Serene flushed. These people were fighting to survive in a city deprived of resources, and she had been so petty as to send them bent nails. "I'm sorry. I was afraid you would make weapons out of the steel." "You were right to be wary," Spirit said. "I did, after all, betray you in the end."
"I'm sure you had a good reason," she said quickly.
"I did," he said with a nod. "But that didn't matter much at the time, did it? You were right about me. I was, am, a tyrant. I kept food back from part of the population. I broke our agreement. And I caused the deaths of some fine men." Serene shook her head, her voice growing firm. "You are not a tyrant. This community proves that. The people love you, and there cannot be tyranny where there is love." He half smiled, his eyes unconvinced. Then, however, he regarded her with an unreadable expression. "Well, I suppose the time during your trial wasn't a complete loss. I gained something very important during those weeks." "The supplies?" Serene asked. "That too." Serene paused, holding his eyes. Then she looked back at the sculptor. "Who is he?" His name is Teyain, Spirit said, though you might know of him by the name Aeyandan.
The gang leader? Serene asked with surprise.
Spirit nodded. Teyain was one of the most accomplished sculptors in Arilon before the Shaod took him. After coming to Elantris, he lost track of himself for a while. He came around eventually. They left the sculptor to his work, Spirit showing her through the last few sections of the city. They passed a large building that he referred to as the Hall of the Fallen, and the sorrow in his voice kept her from asking about it, though she did see several mindless Shaod Seons floating around above its roof. Serene felt a sudden stab of grief.
Aeshi must be like that now, she thought,
remembering the mad Seons she had occasionally seen floating around Elantris. Despite what she'd seen, she continued to hope through the night that Aeshi would find her. The Karathi priests had locked her in some sort of holding cell to wait. Apparently, new Elantrians were only thrown into the city once a day. And she'd stood by the window, wishing he would arrive. She'd waited in vain. With the confusion at the wedding, she couldn't even remember the last time she'd seen him. Not wanting to enter the chapel, he'd gone ahead to wait for her in the throne room. When she'd arrived, had she seen him floating inside the room? Had she heard his voice calling out amid the other shocked members of the wedding party? Or was she simply letting hope cloud her memories? Serene shook her head, sighing as she let Spirit lead her away from the Hall of the Fallen. She kept looking over her shoulder, glancing upward, expecting Aeshi to be there. He always had been before. At least he isn't dead, she thought, forcing aside her grief. He's probably in the city somewhere. I can find him, maybe help him somehow. They continued to walk, and Serene intentionally let herself be distracted by the scenery. She couldn't bear to think of Aeshi anymore. Soon, Spirit led her past several open areas that, looking closely, Serene realized must be fields. Tiny sprouts were appearing in careful rows piled in the dirt, and several men walked among them, searching for weeds. There was a distinct smell in the air. Serene paused. Fish? Fertilizer, Spirit said with a chuckle. That's one time we managed to get the better of you. We asked for trike, knowing full well you would find the nearest barrel of rotten fish to include in the shipment. It seems like you got the better of me more times than not, Serene said, remembering with shame the time she had spent gloating over her sly interpretations of the demands. It seemed no matter how twisted her attempt, the new Elantrians had found uses for all of her useless gifts. We don't have much choice, Princess. Everything from pre-Riod Elantris is rotten or befouled. Even the stones are starting to crumble. No matter how defective you may have thought those supplies, they were still far more useful than anything left in the city. I was wrong, Serene said morosely. Don't start that again, Spirit said. If you begin feeling sorry for yourself, I'll lock you in a room with Galadin for an hour, so that you can learn what true pessimism is.
Galadin?
He was the large fellow you met briefly back at the gates, Spirit explained.
The doula? Serene asked with surprise, recalling the large, broad-faced Elantrian with a thick Duladin accent.
That's him.
A pessimistic doula? She repeated. I've never heard of such a thing.
Spirit laughed again, leading her into a large, stately building. Serene gasped in wonder at its beauty. It was lined with delicate spiraled arches, and the floor was crafted of pale white marble. The wall reliefs were even more intricate than those on the Karathi Temple in Tioris.
"It's a chapel," she said, running her fingers over the intricate marble patterns.
"Yes, it is. How did you know that?"
"These scenes are straight out of the Dokorath," she said, looking up with chiding eyes.
"Someone didn't pay much attention in chapel school."
Spirit coughed to himself.
"Well, don't even try and convince me you didn't go," Serene said, turning back to the carvings. "You're obviously a nobleman. You would have gone to church to keep up appearances, even if you weren't devout."
"My lady is very astute. I am, of course, Domai's humble servant. But I'll admit that my mind sometimes wandered during the sermons."
"So, who were you?" Serene asked conversationally, finally asking the question that had bothered her ever since she had first met Spirit weeks before.
He paused. "The second son of the Lord of Ayin Plantation, a very minor holding in the south of Aerilon."
It could be the truth. She hadn't bothered memorizing the names of minor lords. It had been difficult enough to keep track of the dukes, counts, and barons. It could also be a lie. Spirit appeared to be at least a passable statesman, and he would know how to tell a convincing falsehood. Whatever he was, he had certainly learned some excellent leadership skills, attributes she had found, for the most part, lacking in the Aerilish aristocracy.
"How long?" she began, turning away from the wall. Then she froze, her breath catching in her throat. Spirit was glowing. A spectral light grew from somewhere within. She could see the lines of his bones silhouetted before some awesome power that burned within his chest. His mouth opened in a voiceless scream. Then he collapsed, quivering as the light flared. Serene rushed to his side, then paused, unsure what to do. Gritting her teeth, she grabbed him, lifting his head up to keep the spasms from pounding it repeatedly against the cold marble floor. And she felt something. It brought bumps to her arms and sent a frigid shiver through her body. Something large, something impossibly immense, pressed against her. The air itself seemed to warp away from Spirit's body. She could no longer see his bones. There was too much light. It was as if he were dissolving into pure whiteness. She would have thought him gone if she hadn't felt his weight in her arms. His struggles jerked to a stop, and he fell limp. Then he screamed. A single note, cold and uniform, flew from his mouth in a defiant yell. The light vanished almost immediately, and Serene was left with her heart pounding a rhythm in her breast, her arms bathed in anxious sweat, her breathing coming deeply and rapidly. Spirit's eyes fluttered open a few moments later. As comprehension slowly returned, he smiled wanly and rested his head back against her arm.
"When I opened my eyes, I thought that time I had died for certain."
"What happened?" she asked anxiously. "Should I go for help?"
"No. This is becoming a common occurrence."
"Common?" Serene asked slowly. "For all of us?"
Spirit laughed weakly. "No, just me. I'm the one the door is intent on destroying."
"The door?" she asked. "What does Jesker have to do with this?"
He smiled. "So the fair princess is a religious scholar as well?"
"The fair princess knows a lot of things," Serene said dismissively. "I want to know why a humble servant of Domai thinks the Jesker Overspirit is trying to destroy him."
Spirit moved to sit
and she helped.
"It has to do with Eondor," he explained with a tired voice.
"Eondor? That's a heathen legend."
There wasn't much conviction to her words, not after what she had just seen. Spirit raised an eyebrow.
"So it's all right for us to be cursed with bodies that won't die, but it's not possible for our ancient magic to work? Didn't I see you with a Sion?"
"That's different."
Serene trailed off weakly, her mind turning back to Aishi. Spirit, however, immediately drew her attention again. He raised his hand and began drawing. Lines appeared in the air, following his finger's movement. Karathi teaching of the last 10 years had done its best to downplay Elantris's magic, despite the Sions. Sions were familiar, almost like benevolent spirits sent by Domai for protection and comfort. Serene had been taught, and had believed, that Elantris's magics had mostly been a sham. Now, however, she was faced with a possibility. Perhaps the stories were true.
"Teach me," she whispered. "I want to know."
It wasn't until later, after night had fallen, that Serene finally allowed herself to cry. Spirit had spent the better part of the day explaining all he knew of Eondor. Apparently he had done some extensive research on the subject. Serene had listened with enjoyment because of both the company and the distraction he provided. Before they had known it, dusk was falling outside the chapel windows, and Spirit had found her lodgings. Now she lay curled up, shivering in the cold. The room's two other women slept soundly, neither one bothering with a blanket, despite the frigid air. The other Elantrians didn't seem to notice temperature variation as much as Serene did. Spirit claimed that their bodies were in a kind of stasis, that they had stopped working as they waited for the door to finish transforming them. Still, it seemed unpleasantly cold to Serene. The dismal atmosphere didn't do much for her mood. As she bunched up against the hard stone wall, she remembered the looks, those awful looks. Most other Elantrians had been taken at night, and they would have been discovered quietly. Serene, however, had been exhibited before the entire aristocracy, and at her own wedding, no less. It was a mortifying embarrassment. Her only consolation was that she would probably never see any of them again. It was a small comfort, for by the same reasoning, she would probably never see her father, mother, or brother again. Kyine and his family were lost to her. So, where homesickness had never hit her before, now it attacked with a lifetime's worth of repression. Coupled with it was the knowledge of her failure. Spirit had asked her for news from the outside, but the topic had proven too painful for her. She knew that Tel-Rai was probably already king, and that meant Raethyn would easily convert the rest of Aerilon. Her tears came silently. She cried for the wedding, for Aerilon, for Aishi's madness, and for the shame dear Roael must have felt. Thoughts of her father were worst of all. The idea of never again feeling the love of his gentle banter, never again sensing his overwhelming, unconditional approval, brought to her heart an overpowering sense of dread.
"My lady," whispered a deep, hesitant voice, "is that you?"
Shocked, she looked up through her tears. Was she hearing things? She had to be. She couldn't have heard.
"Lady Serene."
It was Aishi's voice. Then she saw him, hovering just inside the window, his aeon so dim it was nearly invisible.
"Aishi?"
she asked with hesitant wonder. "Oh, blessed Domai," the Aeon exclaimed, approaching quickly. "Aeshi," she said, wiping her eyes with a quivering hand, numbed by shock. "You never use the Lord's name?" "If he has brought me to you, then he has his first Sion convert," Aeshi said, pulsing excitedly. She could barely keep herself from reaching out and trying to hug the ball of light. "Aeshi, you're talking. You shouldn't be able to speak. You should be..." "Mad?" Aeshi said. "Yes, my lady, I know. Yet I feel no different from before." "A miracle," Serene said. "A wonder, if nothing else," the Sion said. "Perhaps I should look into converting to Shukorath." Serene laughed. Sionilin would never hear of it. Of course, his disapproval has never stopped us before, has it? Not once, my lady. Serene rested back against the wall, content to simply enjoy the familiarity of his voice. "You have no idea how relieved I am to find you, my lady. I have been searching for 2 days. I had begun to fear that something awful had happened to you." "It did, Aeshi," Serene said, though she smiled when she said the words. "I mean something more horrible, my lady," the Sion said. "I have seen the kind of atrocities this place can breed." "It has changed, Aeshi," Serene said. "I don't quite understand how he did it, but Spirit brought order to Elantris."
"Whatever he did, if it kept you safe, I bless him for it."
Suddenly, something occurred to her. If Aeshi lived, Serene had a link to the outside world. She wasn't completely separated from Kyine and the others. "Do you know how everyone is doing?" she asked.
"No, my lady. After the wedding dismissed, I spent an hour demanding that the Patriarch let you free. I don't think he was disappointed by your fall. After that, I realized that I had lost you. I went to Elantris's gates, but I was apparently too late to see you get thrown into the city. However, when I asked the guards where you had gone, they refused to tell me anything. They said it was taboo to speak of those who had become Elantrians, and when I told them that I was your Sion, they grew very uncomfortable and stopped speaking to me. I had to venture into the city without information, and I've been searching for you ever since."
Serene smiled, picturing the solemn Sion, essentially a pagan creation, arguing with the head of the Karathi religion. "You didn't arrive too late to see me get thrown into the city, Aeshi. You arrived too early. Apparently they only throw people in before a certain time of day, and the marriage happened quite late. I spent the night in the chapel, and they brought me to Elantris this afternoon."
"Ah," the Sion said, bobbing with comprehension.
"In the future, you can probably find me here, in the clean section of the city."
"This is an interesting place," Aeshi said. "I had never been here before. It is well masked from the outside. Why is this area different from the others?"
"You'll see," she said. "Come back tomorrow."
"Come back, my lady?" Aeshi asked indignantly. "I don't intend to leave you."
"Just briefly, my friend," Serene said. "I need news from K.E., and you need to let the others know I am all right."
"Yes, my lady."
Serene paused for a moment. Spirit had gone through great efforts to make sure no one on the outside knew of New Elantris. She couldn't betray his secret so offhandedly, even if she did trust the people Aeshi would tell. "Tell them you found me, but don't tell them any of what you see and hear."
"Yes, my lady," Aeshi said, his voice confused. "Just a moment, my lady. Your father wishes to speak with you."
The Sion began to pulse. Then his light melted, dripping and reforming into Evan Teo's large oval head.
Ean!
Evan Teo asked with frantic concern. I'm here, Father.
Oh, thank Domai, he said. Serene, are you unharmed?
I'm fine, Father, she assured him, strength returning. She suddenly knew that she could do anything and go anywhere, as long as she had the promise of Evan Teo's voice.
Curse that Cianolin! He didn't even try to let you free. If I weren't so devout, I'd behead him without a second thought.
We must be fair, Father, Serene said. If a peasant's daughter can be cast into Elantris, then a king's daughter shouldn't be exempt.
If my reports are true, then no one should be thrown into that pit.
It's not as bad as you think, Father, Serene said. I can't explain, but things are more hopeful than anticipated.
Hopeful or not, I'm getting you out of there.
Father, no, Serene said. If you bring soldiers to Aerilon, you'll not only leave Teod undefended, but you'll alienate our only ally.
It won't be our ally for long if my spy's predictions are accurate, Evan Teo said. Duke Telrai is waiting a few days to consolidate power, but everyone knows he'll soon take the throne, and he's on very friendly terms with that Yorn Wraithen. You tried, Ean, but Aerilon is lost. I'm going to come get you. I won't really need all that many men. And then I'm going to fall back and prepare for an invasion. No matter how many men Weirin raises, he'll never get them past our armada. Teod has the finest ships on the sea.
Father, you might have given up on Aerilon, but I can't.
Serene, Evan Teo said warningly, do not start that again. You are no more Aerilish than I.
I mean it, Father, Serene said firmly. I will not leave Aerilon.
Eidos Domai, Serene, this is lunacy. I am your father and your king. I'm going to bring you back, whether you want to come or not.
Serene calmed herself. Force would never work with Evan Teo. Father, she said, letting love and respect sound in her voice. You taught me to be bold. You made me into something stronger than the ordinary. At times I cursed you, but mostly I blessed your encouragement. You gave me the liberty to become myself. Would you deny that now by taking away my right to choose? Her father's white head hung silently in the dark room. Your lessons won't be complete until you let go, Father, Serene said quietly. If you truly believe the ideals that you gave me, then you will allow me to make this decision. Finally, he spoke.
You love them that much, Ean?
They have become my people, Father.
It has been less than 2 months.
Love is independent of time, Father. I need to stay with Aerilon. If it is to fall, I must fall with it. But I don't think it will. There has to be a way to stop Telrai.
But you're trapped in that city, Serene, her father said. What can you do from there?
Aishi can act as messenger. I can no longer lead them, but I might be able to help. Even if I cannot, I still must stay.
I see,
her father finally said, sighing deeply.
Your life is yours, Serene. I have always believed that, even if I forget it once in a while.
You love me, Father. We protect what we love.
And I do, Evantio said.
Never forget that, my daughter.
Serene smiled. I never have.
Aishi,
Evantio ordered, calling the Sion's consciousness into the conversation.
Yes, my king,
Aishi's voice said, its deep tone deferential and reverent.
You will watch and protect her. If she is injured, you will call me.
As I ever have and ever will, my king,
Aishi responded.
Serene, I'm still going to set the armada in a defensive pattern. Let your friends know that any ship approaching Teoish waters will be sunk without question. The entire world has turned against us, and I cannot risk the safety of my people.
I'll warn them, father, Serene promised.
Good night, then, Een. And may Domai bless you.
Chapter 42. Raythan was back in control. Like a hero from the old Sfordish epics, he had descended to the underworld, physically, mentally, and spiritually, and returned a stronger man. Dilaf's hold was broken. Only now could Raythan see that the chains Dilaf had used to bind him had been forged from Raythan's own envy and insecurity. He had felt threatened by Dilaf's passion, for he had felt his own faith inferior. Now, however, his resolve was firm, as it had been when he first arrived in Aerilan. He would be the savior of this people. Dilaf backed down unhappily. The Arteth grudgingly promised to hold no meetings or sermons without Raythan's overt permission. And in exchange for being officially named head Arteth of the chapel, Dilaf also consented to relieve his numerous odives from their vows, instead swearing them to the less binding position of Crondet. The biggest change, however, wasn't in the Arteth's actions, but in Raythan's confidence. As long as Raythan knew that his faith was as strong as Dilaf's, then the Arteth would not be able to manipulate him. Dilaf would not, however, relent in his pursuit of Elantris's destruction.
They are unholy,
the Arteth insisted as they walked toward the chapel. This night's sermon had been extremely successful. Raythan could now claim over 3/4 of the local Aerilish nobility as Durethi members or sympathizers. Telrai would crown himself within the week, and as soon as his rule stabilized a bit, he would announce his conversion to Shudarath. Aerilan was Raythan's, and he still had a month left before Wyrn's deadline.
The Elantrians have served their purpose, Arteth, Raythan explained to Dilaf as they walked.
It was cold this night, though not cold enough for one's breath to mist.
Why do you forbid me to preach against them, my lord?
Dilaf's voice was bitter. Now that Raythan forbade him to speak about Elantris, the Arteth's speeches seemed almost emasculated.
Preaching against Elantris no longer has a point, Raythan said, matching Dilaf's anger with logic. Do not forget that our hate had a purpose. Now that I have proven Yadath's supreme power over Elantris, we have effectively shown that our god is true, while Domai is false. The people understand that subconsciously.
But the Elantrians are still unholy.
They are vile, they are blasphemous, and they are definitely unholy. But right now they are also unimportant. We need to focus on the Durethi religion itself, showing the people how to link themselves to Yadath by swearing fealty to yourself or one of the other Arteths. They sense our power, and it is our duty to show them how to partake of it.
And Elantris goes free?